Hare
Abhay was enamored with the Ratha Yatra festivals of Lord Jagannath, held yearly in Calcutta. The biggest Calcutta Ratha Yatra was the Mullocks, with three separate carts bearing the deities of Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. Beginning from the Radha Govinda temple, the carts would proceed down Harrison Road for a short distance and then return. The Mullocks would distribute large quantities of Lord Jagannath's prasadam to the public on this day. Ratha Yatra was held in cities all over India, but the original gigantic Ratha Yatra, attended each year by millions of pilgrims, took place 300 miles south of Calcutta at Jagannath Puri. For centuries at Puri, three wooden carts, 45 feet high, had been towed by the crowds along the two-mile parade route in commemoration of one of Lord Krishna's eternal pastimes. Abhay had heard how Lord Chaitanya himself, 400 years before, had danced and led ecstatic chanting of the Hare Krishna at the Puri Ratha Yatra festival. Abhay would sometimes look at the railway timetable or ask about the fare to Vrindavan and Puri, thinking how he would collect the money and go there. Abhay wanted to have his own cart and to perform his own Ratha Yatra. And naturally, he turned to his father for help. Gaur Mohan agreed, but there were difficulties. When he took his son to several carpenter shops, he found that he could not afford to have a cart made. On their way home, Abhay began crying, and an old Bengali woman approached and asked him what the matter was. Gaur Mohan explained that the boy wanted a Ratha Yatra cart, but he couldn't afford to have one made. "Oh, I have a cart," the woman said. And she invited Gaur Mohan and Abhay to her place and showed them the cart. It looked old, but it was still operable, and it was just the right size, about 3 feet high. Gaur Mohan purchased it and helped to restore and decorate it. Father and son together constructed 16 supporting columns and placed a canopy on top, resembling as closely as possible the ones on the big carts at Puri. They also attached the traditional wooden horse and driver in the front of the cart. Abhay insisted that it must look authentic. Gaur Mohan bought paints, and Abhay personally painted the cart, copying the Puri originals. His enthusiasm was great, and he became an insistent organizer of various aspects of the festival. But when he tried making fireworks for the occasion from a book that gave illustrated descriptions of the process, Rajani intervened. That's funny. Abhay engaged his playmates in helping him, especially his sister, Bhavatarini. And he became their natural leader. Responding to his entreatises, amused mothers in the neighborhood agreed to cook special preparations so that he could distribute the prasad at his Rath Yatra festival. Like the festival at Puri, Abhai's Rath Yatra ran for 8 consecutive days. His family members gathered, and the neighborhood children joined in a procession, pulling the cart, playing drums and kartals, and chanting. Wearing a dhoti and no shirt in the heat of summer, Abhai led the children in chanting Hare Krishna and in singing the appropriate Bengali bhajan, Ki Koro Rai Kamalini. So the song is, "What are you doing, Srimati Radharani? Please come out and see. They are stealing your dearmost treasure, Krishna the black gem. If the young girl only knew, the young boy Krishna, treasure of her heart, is now forsaking her." Abhai copied whatever he had seen at adult religious functions, including dressing the deities, offering the deities food, offering artik with a ghee lamb and incense, and making prostrated obeisances. From Harrison Road, the procession entered the circular road inside the courtyard of the Radha Govinda temple, and took a while before the deities, and stood a while before the deities. Seeing the fun, Gormohan's friends approached him. "Why haven't you invited us? You are holding a big ceremony, and you don't invite us? What is this?" "They are just children playing," his father replied. "Oh, children playing?" the men joked. "You are depriving us by saying that this is only for children?" Funny, huh? The Bengali way of joking. Very subtle, but very pleasant. While Abhai was ecstatically absorbed in the Rath Yatra processions, Gormohan spent money for 8 consecutive days, and Rajani cooked various dishes to offer, along with flowers to Lord Jagannath. Although everything Abhai did was imitation, his inspiration and steady drive for holding the festival were genuine. His spontaneous spirit sustained the 8-day children's festival, and each successive year brought a new festival, which Abhai would observe in the same way. When Abhai was about 6 years old, he asked his father for a deity of his own worship. So this means before he was 6, he's doing the Rath Yatra. Since infancy, he had watched his father doing puja at home and had regularly seen the worship of Radha Govinda. He had watched regularly the worship of Radha Govinda and thinking, "When will I be able to worship Krishna like this?" On Abhaya's request, his father purchased a pair of little Radha Krishna deities and gave them to him. From then on, whatever Abhaya ate, he would first offer to Radha and Krishna. And imitating his father and the priests of Radha Govinda, he would offer his deities a large ghee lamp and put them to rest at night. Abhaya and his sister Bhavatarini became dedicated worshippers of the little Radha Krishna deities, spending much of their time dressing and worshipping them, and sometimes singing bhajans. Their brothers and sisters laughed, teasing Abhai and Bhavatarini by saying that because they were more interested in the deity than in their education, they would not live long. But Abhai replied that they didn't care. So that's always one way to get people. Because they can't. Because people work, they're presenting things logically, generally in the material sense, but it's all based on emotion. So if they say, "Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that?" You give some reason, because this is what you're supposed to do, or this is the tradition, or this that. Then they'll always argue and fight. But if you just say, "I like it," then they can't say anything. You know what I'm saying? what can they say? Because that's why they do what they do. You know, so in the same way, another way is like you can say, you know, I don't care.
You're not going to get a job when you leave.
Well, yeah, you don't. Yeah, you do this, you're not going to get a paper, you can't get a, you know, job like everyone else. This, that. I don't care. Or if you don't want to spend so many words, then you just say, so. That one will always.
That helped you a lot, didn't it?
Yes. It, no one else has anything to say. So. Okay. It's funny how they say, because you don't go to school, you won't live long. Like, the two have something to do with each other. Right. Once a neighbor asked Abai's mother, "How old is your little son?" "He is 7," she asked, as Abai listened with interest. He had never heard anyone discuss his age before, but now he understood for the first time, "I am 7." In addition to the education, that means they didn't have birthdays.
Yeah.
You know? Because we haven't heard of one birthday yet. Like that, that's a funny thing, is, yeah, they just...
Generally,
yeah, don't worry about
they
it.
They celebrate the festivals and not their own.
Yeah. Or if they do something, it's a distributing shot. I think there was a festival Mother Jashoda told Balaram. I think he had to come, to bring Krishna back early from the coward pastures so he could distribute prasad to the Brahmins. Mm. You know, so he'd be back for lunch to help distribute prasad. Like that. In addition to the education Abhaya received at the kindergarten, to which he had first been forcibly dragged, he also received private tutoring at home from his fifth year to his eighth. He learned to read Bengali and began learning Sanskrit. Then in 1904, when he was 8 years old, Abhay entered the nearby Motilal Free School. Motilal Seal Free School on the corner of Harrison and Central Roads. Like that. That school's still there, just around the corner.
Still a school?
Yeah, it's still Motilal Seal Free School. Like that. Like that. I mean, they have pictures, but they're really small, so no one will be able to see. But it's an old, old. Yeah. Big old columns and everything. Motilal Seals Free College. Well, he went at 8, so that before that he was going to a kindergarten. I don't know where that was. Motilal was a boys' school established in 1842 by a wealthy Suvarnavalak Vaishnava. The building was stone, 2 stories, and surrounded by a stone wall. The teachers were Indian and the students were Bengalis from local Suvarnavanic families. Dressed in their dhotis and kurtas, the boys would leave their mothers and fathers in the morning and walk together in little groups, each boy carrying a few books and his tiffin. Inside the school compound, they would talk together and play until the clanging bell called them to their classes. The boys would enter the building, skipping through the halls, running up and down the stairs, coming out to the wide front veranda on the second floor, until their teachers gathered them all before their wooden desks and benches. For lessons in math, science, history, geography, and their own Vaishnav religion and culture. How did they get the time? Classes were disciplined and formal. Each long bench held 4 boys, who shared a common desk. With four inkwells, if a boy were naughty, his teacher would order him to stand up on the bench. A Bengali reader the boy studied was the well-known Folk Tales of Bengal, a collection of traditional Bengali folk tales, stories a grandmother would tell local children, tales of witches, ghosts, tantric spirits, talking animals, saintly brahmanas, or sometimes wicked ones, heroic warriors, thieves, princes, princesses, spiritual renunciation, and virtuous marriage. Have to find out, what is this, Folk Tales of Bengal. In their daily walks to and from school, Abhaya and his friends came to recognize, at least from their childish viewpoint, all the people who regularly appeared in the Calcutta streets. The British superiors traveling about, usually in horse-drawn carriages. The hackney drivers, the bungies who cleansed the street with straw brooms, and even the local pickpockets and prostitutes who stood on the street corners. Abhaya turned 10 the same year the rails were laid for the electric tram on Harrison Road. He watched the workers lay the tracks, and when he first saw the trolley's car rod touching the overhead wire, it amazed him. He daydreamed of getting a stick, touching the wire himself, and running along by electricity. Okay. Although electric power was new in Calcutta and not widespread, only the wealthy could afford it in their homes. Along with the electric tram came new electric street lights, carbon arc lamps replacing the old gas lights. Carbon arc, so it means that, like what you have in your pencil, they have a rod like that, very fat, and then that is what they burn. So electricity fires that, and it's very, very bright. Abhay and his friends used to go down the street looking on the ground for the old used carbon tips, which the maintenance man would leave behind. When Abhaya saw his first gramophone box, he thought an electric man or a ghost was inside the box singing. Right? Because they were quite big, you know, then they had the turntable and then the big horn like that. So he thought somebody was inside singing. Abhay liked to ride his bicycle down the busy Calcutta streets. Although when the soccer club had been formed at school, he had requested the position of goalie so that he wouldn't have to run. He was an avid cyclist. A favorite ride was to go south towards Dalhousie Square, with its large fountain spraying water into the air. That was near Rajabhavan, the viceroy's mansion, which Abhay would glimpse through the gates. Riding further south, he would pass through the open arches of the Maidan, Calcutta's main public park, with its beautiful green flat land spanning out towards Chowringhee, and the stately buildings and streets, trees of the British Quarter. The park also had exciting places to cycle past. The racetrack, Fort William, the stadium. The Maidan bordered the Ganges, locally known as the Hooghly. And sometimes Abhaya would cycle home along its shores, where he saw numerous bathing cots, with stone steps leading down to the Ganges and often with temples at the top of the steps. There was the burning ghat where bodies were cremated, and close to his home, a pontoon bridge that crossed the river into the city of Howrah. In other words, Howrah Bridge wasn't there. It was just a pontoon bridge at that time. Big pontoons, you know, very, very big. At age 12, though it made no deep impression on him, Abhay was initiated by a professional guru. The guru told him about his own master, a great yogi, who had once asked him, "What do you want to eat?" Abhay's family guru had replied, "Fresh pomegranates from Afghanistan." "All right," the yogi had replied, "go into the next room." And there he found a branch of pomegranates, ripe as if freshly taken from the tree. A yogi who came to see Abhay's father said that he had once sat down with his own master and touched him and had been transported within moments to the city of Dwarka by yogic power. So that's all these kind of things are, how you say, very impressive to the locals, this kind of stuff. But, you know, but it's still not spiritual, right? Generally, it's taken that anything that's not explainable by, you know, just how things should normally work, right? But you can see it or experience it, then they'll call that spiritual. When all it is actually it's just mystic, right? It's just subtle material. So spiritual is something else. Spiritual is knowing Krishna, being able to come to the platform of understanding Krishna, being able to associate with Krishna. Right? But here, somehow or another, these things distract a lot of the Hindus very much. Kormohan did not have a high opinion of Bengali's growing number of so-called sadhus. The non-devotional and personalist philosophers, the demigod worshippers, the ganja smokers, the beggars. But he was so charitable that he would invite the charlatans into his home. Every day, Abhai saw many so-called sadhus, as well as some who were genuine, coming to eat in his home as guests of his father. And from their words and activities, Abhai became aware of many things, including the existence of yogic powers. At a circus, he and his father once saw a yogi tied up hand and foot and put into a bag. The bag was sealed and put into a box, which was then locked and sealed, but still the man came out. Abhai, however, did not give these things much importance compared with the devotional activities his father had taught him, his worship of Radha and Krishna, and his observance of Rath Yatra. Hindus and Muslims lived peacefully together in Calcutta, and it was not unusual for them to attend one another's social and religious functions. They had their differences, but there had always been harmony. So when trouble started, Abhai's family understood it to be due to political agitation by the British. Abhai was 13 years old when the first Hindu-Muslim riot broke out. He did not understand exactly what it was, but somehow he found himself in the middle of it. Right? In other words, for hundreds of years, the Hindus and Muslims have been living peacefully together. And so when each one of them had a big festival, then others would, you know, attend. There was, you know, the aspects of it that were connected with their, you know, that they could relate to. So then all this Hindu-Muslim riots and all that interactions, that was all actually created by the British. Because if you can't control them, then you divide them, right? In other words, if they can control India, that's nice, but if they lose control of India, they wouldn't want India to be powerful. So it's powerful if everyone works together. So you create dissension between different groups so that they fight amongst each other. And then they're so busy fighting with each other, then they're not anymore a threat to you. Does that make sense? Or the other thing is, if you can't manage it, then you don't want them to be happy. So therefore you create dissension so that they'll always be fighting and rioting like that. So then if they're not in charge, then, you know, they don't feel bad because now the others are suffering also. You know, so like this is very, very, we can see, very mundane, very low class, even though the British present themselves as very sophisticated and elevated. But, you know, politically then they were very, very, low class, very mean-minded, like that. They didn't mind destroying others' cultures, others' life, you know, for their own economic or political purposes. You know, and they made no bones about it. It was very obvious, and it was like, what's the problem? You know, we're just dealing with the local natives, you know, what do they know? You know, so it's like very, very proud. But you can see is that pride then basically destroyed them. Srila Prabhupada. All around our neighborhood on Harrison Road were Mohammedans. The Mullock house and our house were respectable. Otherwise, it was surrounded by what is called Kashba and Basti. Basti is, I didn't realize it, Basti. Basti means slums. You know, you just take a few things, put it together, put up some, whatever you can find, some chetai, this, that, a plastic thing on the roof, throw a tire on top of that, you know, like that. So those are bustis. So kashba must be better quality bustis. They must be those little, you know, making these little things and expanding houses and building all kinds of stuff that doesn't belong there. So the riot was there, and I had gone to play. I did not know that the riot had taken place in Market Square. I was coming home, and one of my class friends said, "Don't go to your house. That side is rioting now." We lived in the Mohammedan quarter, and the fighting between the two parties was going on. But I thought maybe it was something like two gundas, hoodlums, fighting. I had seen one gunda once stabbing another gunda, and I had seen pickpockets. They were our neighbor men, So I thought it was like that. This is going on. Right? In other words, they have their dispute. They bother each other. Don't bother anyone else. But when I came to the crossing of Harrison Road and Holiday Street, I saw one shop being plundered. I was only a child, a boy. I thought, what is this happening? In the meantime, my family, my father and mother, were at home, frightened, thinking the child has not come. They became so disturbed they came out of the home, expecting where from the child will come. So what could I do? When I saw the rioting, I began to run towards our house. And one Mohammedan, he wanted to kill me. He took out his knife and actually ran after me. But I passed somehow or another. I was saved. So as I came running before our gate, my parents got back their life. So without speaking anything, I went to the bedroom. And it was in the winter, so without saying anything, I laid down, wrapped myself with a quilt. Then later, I was rising from bed, questioning, is it ended? The riot has ended? When Abai was 15, thank you. When Abai was 15, he was afflicted with beriberi. What's beriberi? I know it's some far out tropical disease.
Not exactly sure what it is.
What it is, okay. And his mother, who was also stricken, regularly had to rub a powder of calcium chloride on his legs to reduce the swelling. Abai soon recovered, and his mother, who had never stopped any of her duties, also recovered. But only a year later, at the age of 46, his mother suddenly died. Her passing away was an abrupt lowering of the curtain, ending the scenes of his tender childhood. His mother's affectionate care, her prayers and mantras for his protection, her feeding and grooming him, her dutifully scolding him. Her passing affected his sisters even more than him, though it certainly turned him more towards the affectionate care of his father. He was already 16, but now he was forced to grow up and prepare to enter on his own into worldly responsibilities. His father gave him solace. He instructed Abhai that there was nothing for which to lament. The soul is eternal, and everything happens by the will of Krishna. So he should have faith and depend upon Krishna. Abhai listened and understood. Chapter 2, College, Marriage, and Gandhi's Movement. Quote by Srila Prabhupada. I joined Gandhi's movement in 1920. And gave up my education. Although I had passed my final exam, BA, I gave it up and did not appear. Like that. So he didn't accept the degree. So somehow or another, Prabhupada, even without a degree, you know, worked at a big company as the manager, opened his own business, did so many things. Surprising. In 1914, the war came, and many Indians enlisted in the fight on behalf of their ruler, Great Britain. Abhai saw British airplanes landing on the racetrack in Maidan Park, and the newspaper told him of the war, but he was not directly affected. In 1916, he began college. There were two prestigious colleges in Calcutta, Presidency and Scottish Church Colleges. And Scottish Churches. Abhai entered Scottish Churches College. It was a Christian school, but well reputed amongst the Bengalis, and many Vaishnava families sent their sons there. Like that, that school is also there. Same street, just farther up. And if you're going down Harrison Road towards the east, then if you go right, which you go towards, you know, the temple, just around the corner is that Motilal Seals. And if you go left, and I think it's up two blocks, then it's the college. The professors, most of whom were priests in this Church of Scotland, were known as sober, moral men. and the students received a good education. It was a proper and respectable institution, and since it was in North Calcutta and not far from Harrison Road, Gaur Mohan could keep Abhay at home. Gaur Mohan had long ago decided he would not allow Abhay to go to London, in the name of education, become exposed to the corruption of the West. He wanted Abhay to be a pure devotee of Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna. Yet on the other hand, Gaur Mohan didn't want to give up his son to become a brahmachari disciple of a guru. Where was such a qualified guru to be found? His experience of yogis and swamis had not inspired much confidence. He wanted his son to keep all the principles of spiritual life. Yet he also knew that Abhay would have to marry and earn a livelihood. Under the circumstances, enrolling Abhay in Scottish Church College was the most protection Gaur Mohan knew to give his son. The college had been founded by the Reverend Alexander Duff, a Krishna missionary who had gone to Calcutta in 1830, a pioneer in getting Indians to appreciate European civilization. The Reverend A. Duff had first founded the Central Assembly Institution for, quote, propagation of the gospel through education, at once liberal and religious on Western principles, and with English as the medium of instruction in the higher classes. I guess that's a mission statement. Later, he had founded the College of the Church of Scotland, and in 1908 had amalgamated both institutions as Scottish Churches College. Srila Prabhupada, we respected our professors as our fathers. The relationship between the students and the professors was very good. The Vice Chancellor, Professor W.S. Urquhart, was a perfect and kind-hearted gentleman, with whom we sometimes joked. In my first year, I studied English, this is all Prabhupada speaking, and Sanskrit. And in my second year, Sanskrit and philosophy. Then philosophy and economics. It's funny how each one goes 2 years and overlaps the others. Another professor was J.C. Scrimgeour. Yeah, we're missing someone who might tell us how you'd say it. He was professor of English literature. While teaching English literature, he would give parallel passages from Bankim Chandra Chatterjee. Yes, yes, he would say, your Bankim Babu said like this. He had studied Bankim's literatures, and he compared Bankim Chandra Chatterjee to Walter Scott. In those days, Dickens and Sir Walter Scott were two very great English literary men. So he taught us those novelists, and the relationship was very nice. Abhay became a member of the English Society and would recite Keats, Shelley, and other poets to his classmates. As a member of the Sanskrit Society, he recited the Gita, and some of his fellow students especially noted how eloquently he recited the 11th chapter, describing the 11th universal form of Krishna. He also played soccer and took part in theatrics. Amrit Lal Bose, a famous organizer and director of theater in Bengal, rehearsed Abhay and a group of his classmates in a drama from the life of Lord Chaitanya. Since Chaitanya Leela was available in the public theater for half a rupee, Mr. Bose argued, what was the need for an amateur production? And his answer was, they should appreciate your performance of Lord Chaitanya so much that after seeing it, they will agree never to sin. Okay. Watch the drama and then people would take up devotional activities. The eminent director was volunteering his service and training these boys, but on one condition: they would not perform publicly unless he said the production was perfect. For more than a year, Abhay and the others rehearsed the Chaitanya play until finally the director allowed them to stage a public performance. Abhaya playing the part of Advaitacharya, noticed that many people in the audience were crying. At first he could not understand why, but when he realized because the players had been well trained, and because they were sincere, the audience was moved. That was Abhaya's first and last dramatic performance. Abhaya's psychology teacher, Professor Urquhart, gave evidence that women's brain weighed less than men's. His economics professor lectured on Marshall's theory that family affection is the impetus for economic development. In Sanskrit, Abhaya used a text by Rowe and Webb that describes Sanskrit as the mother of all languages.
Interesting.
Yeah. So these things aren't coming from us. While studying Kalidasa's Kumara Sambhava in Sanskrit, Abhaya was impressed by Kalidasa's expression of the word dhira, which means undisturbed or self-controlled. According to Kalidas, once, long ago, Lord Shiva was sitting in deep meditation. Because the demigods were at war with the demons, they wanted a commander-in-chief born from the semen of Lord Shiva. So the demigods sent a beautiful young girl, Parvati, to interrupt his meditation. Although Parvati worshipped Lord Shiva and even touched his genitals, he was not disturbed. His resistance to temptation was the perfect example of being dhira. As at other British-run schools in India, all the European teachers at Scottish Church College had to learn the local language. Once Professor Urquhart walked past Abhaya and a group of students as they were eating some peanuts and talking together. One of the students, speaking in Bengali, made a joke at Professor Urquhart's expense. To their surprise, Professor Urquhart immediately turned to the jokester and answered in Bengali, and Abhaya and the others felt ashamed. Like that, because they didn't know. I've had that happen where I'll be walking along on the road, and a bunch of Bengali, punks will come along, and they'll start talking. They'll say something, hello, this, that, ask for the time, whatever. And then I think it was after that time I stopped wearing watches because of that. So then they're going along and goofing all kinds of things in Bengali about me, right? Just going on and on and on. So after, a couple of minutes, this and that, and they kind of had a laugh, then I turned to one of them and in Bengali asked, so your mother taught you to joke about other people like this? And then bang, they're just quiet. He knows Bengali, so like that. So it's
an effective method.
Yeah, effective method. Like that. So you see, his Prabhupada is learning all these different things, but he's able to, connect these to Krishna. One is that also is that the environment would consider the local, in other words, the modern education was considering the local culture and languages and everything. It would also compare things in there and try to make it relevant for them. So that would be, and that was modern education. Somehow or another nowadays, because of their so-called international concept or flavor, they don't consider the local culture or environment or language. But here we see so much was being presented. Right? So they had they were learning Sanskrit in college. They were, studying the Vedic literatures. They were learning philosophy. Yes.
As you made a point that Srila Prabhupada, he opened the business without having a degree like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. But somebody can argue back that in those days, those days were the time, and if somebody is high class, passed, then he was considered a very well-educated person. So, Srila Prabhupada he just neglected his BA degree. So how can we tackle that kind of situation if it comes?
It means that so many things are considered high class, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's reality. You know what I'm saying? means it may be considered high class to wear certain clothes, but that doesn't necessarily get you a job, or that doesn't necessarily feed you. So many things, but that what's high class is arbitrary. You know, you go back some other time and they considered it wasn't so important. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, if you're going to base your life on what people, what a mass of people think is important, then where is your individuality? Right? People are complaining that, you know, you should be your own person, your individual, not be controlled by others. Therefore, why should you follow all these Vedic principles? But at the same time, then they're being controlled by the local populace, and they don't even know who it is. It just happens to be what's in the newspaper, or on the news, or on the billboards, or, you know, people talk about it, but that doesn't necessarily make it important. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's, you know, very individual. It's up to the individual. Otherwise, you're saying that doesn't work, but it's not like you don't eat, you'll die. You know, it's not like that, or don't breathe, you'll die. This is how they, in their life, have decided things will work. You know what I'm saying? Like that. If you're smart enough that you're going to make a lot of money, you'll make it anyway. Right? Otherwise, you have to work for somebody who is smart enough. Right? And then depending upon your qualification, you'll get paid more or less. So if you're very intelligent and very practical, then you'll move up by that. So either you can have the degree, and that shows some degree of understanding and commitment, but still it's up to how hard you work. So even you have the degree, it's how hard you work that's important. So even if you want to say, yes, study, get a degree, but where's the character development? Where's the service attitude being developed? Where's the focus being developed? Where's the commitment? Where's the value system? Where's that? Because that will be more important. You know what I'm saying? So then to say that, to give that up for just doing an academic degree where you're not developing character and a service attitude, ability to work with others, then how is that important? You know what I'm saying? Like it's saying, you know, why you're spending all this time cooking? You know, you should be, you know, out, you know, market, buying things and collecting pots and pans and this and that. You know what I'm saying? But once you have the pots and pans, you can't cook. You know what I'm saying? So the person with character is the person who's going to do well and move up. You understand? Because if you have character and you're respectful and you have a good service, they're willing to train you. But otherwise, if you're just average, then you have to come with a degree.
Even then, they said, you're not accepting.
Yeah, don't accept the degrees.
They're retraining them. The businesses are now the ones setting the degree. They say that up to 70% of graduates with a degree who don't get a job have to be retrained.
Retrained, yeah, because it's not connected with the reality of what's going on. You have to remember is that you have the degree, but who did you learn from? You learn from a person who's teaching you something that he doesn't do. You know what I'm saying? You go to a business school, learn from a guy teaching you business, but he's not doing business. You know what I'm saying? If he was a businessman, you know, he gets his, you know, $1,000 a month or whatever he gets. How come he hasn't invested that and now he's making tens of thousands? Because he doesn't know business. He can't do business. You know what I'm saying?
Just an argument on that point is that you know, we're also teaching different subjects, but we don't do those.
What do you mean? I do puja, I do yajna, I chant mantras, I work. You know what I'm saying? The Vedic system is those who can do, they teach. The modern system is those who can't do, they teach.
Yeah, so you can do it, but then you choose to teach.
Yeah, but you also are doing it.
Well,
the reason that it's like this, they'll teach yajna over there, other people have learned yajna, but the only people in this movement that can do yajna nicely, that people are impressed with, have come out of this school. No exceptions. Just no exceptions. The only people in this movement who can chant mantras to the way that we can chant have come out of here. They're the only ones. Because it's the lifestyle here. It's what people do. That's why it becomes so good. Others, they teach something, but it doesn't come out. You know, it's like that. Here, it's like that. We have students give class at the temple. Why is that? Because they're listening to classes here from people who give classes in the temple. You know what I'm saying? The other schools, they teach some philosophy. The person who's teaching them doesn't give classes. The only classes they give are to those kids. You know what I'm saying? You know, the martial arts is somebody who is doing martial, can do them. Does that make sense? So the whole point is the Vedic system is those who can do those things or are doing those things, and that's there. So you always hear in the Vedic literatures of the head of the ashram, that sometimes he's not there because he's off doing a yajna somewhere or doing something. Does that make sense? So it's always there. And the other thing is, even if we were saying is that they're teaching something, but the point is the Vedic principles, everything's common. So if you can learn any subject actually through any other subject. You know what I'm saying? It's not based on one, that each subject separate from the other. You know, English, it doesn't mean you know anything about mathematics. So they have connection. They're based on the same principles. So then the teachers can also teach that. Even if that area is not so much their expertise, they can teach that. But that's the whole idea. The concept is that it's not just a job or something you do. It's a lifestyle. So being a Brahmin is a lifestyle. You study, you teach, it's what you do. This other, it's a job. Because when the teacher goes home, how he lives at home is no different than anybody else, how they live at home. So it's only he's a teacher by occupation, he's not a teacher by lifestyle. So that's the whole point, is he can't train you in that lifestyle. So even if he wasn't able to practice that topic, the lifestyle that goes with the topic, he can train you. So therefore, when you go out, if you have brains in it and you can practically apply it, you would be able to do it and you would have the character and drive to be able to be successful. And these others, they don't teach a lifestyle. Therefore, it's not very efficient. We see here that we're very respectful towards the teachers. But nowadays, that's not happening.
Yeah, he was saying that.
Yeah, they're like fathers. So it was seen like that. They behaved like that. They reciprocated. So then they learned much, much more. Much, much more. Well, nowadays, I would say the efficiency is maybe 30-40%, you know, at best, of what it could be.
They're trying to maintain the discipline in the class.
Yeah. They're just trying to, keep the lid on it so it doesn't explode. That's why they depend upon homework. So those kids that will do the homework, they actually learn something. Those who don't learn anything. And then, because the majority of the students don't learn much, they have to drop the standard. You know, that's where the curve came in, is that, you know, you should get this much of a grade, but if everybody gets lower than that, then, you know, let's say you're supposed to get, you know, high grade 80-90%, like that, but if everybody's getting 20-30%, then the guy with 30% gets the A, and the guy with 20%, he flunks. You know, that's the curve. You know, it's stupid. Doesn't mean anything. It means they all should flunk. Right? But then that would then fall on there's something wrong with the teacher or something wrong with the system. You know? So therefore.
Yeah, they do that in university, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
If you get 50 is a pass.
Yeah.
But if you get 45,
mm-hmm.
Then, depending on the curve, then they just bump you up to a pass.
Yeah. Yeah, it means if everybody else was getting in the 40s, then, you know, they would just choose where is the pass and where is the, you know, it's not real. That's the thing, is if it was something solid, that's another thing. Someone's going to medical school or law school, you can say there's something solid there. You know, they're being trained, they're going to teachers, the teachers do practice that, or we're practicing that.
But even you see with those ones, they do that, but they're and they still have to go.
Yeah, they still have to go and to the hospital and spend some time. And even after they get out, they're an intern for X amount of, you know, time and this and that. And a long time, I think it's like, you know, yeah, it takes you like 12 years to open your own practice or something. It's something. Yeah, so it's pretty wild. So, you know, but at the same time, is there saying you get a BA and it means something? You know, it's like, you know, what can you do with it?
Well, you could see, like, in Prabhupada's time, the BA would mean something. Sanskrit, philosophy, economics.
Yeah, no, it was.
He just didn't, he passed it.
It was just, what it meant was just, it was more of a general education, but in all, like, solid things, you know, like that. So, you know, they were doing literature and that, so that would refine the fineness, Sanskrit for the actual solid, you know, language, philosophy, economics, because, you know, practical what the world's going. So these kind of things are there. So it's very, you could say it's a much better quality of education, yes.
Actually, the schools nowadays, those people who are management schools, they are good businessmen because they make the schools as a business.
Yeah, well, generally, if you check, they're not teachers, they're businessmen.
Yeah. So then they make the BA courses, so then they attract so many people, so they pay so much money, they make money on them, and then after that, well, now you have your diploma, you can do whatever you want. Yeah. They feel good, they are good. No, so.
No, it's big business. Outside is big business. Like that. Okay, where we were. Okay. Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.